Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races Tuesday, and that means Andy Serling, New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
We're good. Real good.
Well, glad to hear it.
There's a couple of things that I haven't gotten to yet. We've had a busy morning and a half yesterday and today, and there were some results that really need to be, you know, beyond the Oaklawn stuff. There were some results, particularly on Sunday in New York. Chad Brown with a mammoth day Sunday that somehow has gone a little under the radar.
Well, I mean, I don't know about a little under the radar. There's been some talk about it, but, I mean, it is March in Aqueduct. It's not usually a time that people are going to get some of the notice as Triple Crown races, right?
Yep, understood. Understood, but the stake winner was one thing, the New York bred in the Damon Runyon, but earlier on the card,
Mystic Knight,
that was something.
Yeah, that was really, really well. I agree. I mean, the track had gone back to its default position for most of the last 5 weeks at Gotham weekend of being a gold rail, and Mystic Knight just made a huge run. I don't know if it was ever saved Brown in the race, and made a big, long, sustained run for around the 3/8 ball to run down a horse that ran running very well for Rudy. I agree, and that horse only his fourth start. You know, it's funny. I never had a conversation with Chad about that horse at all. We were talking after the race that it was an impressive race, but not before at any point. But somebody else had told me when that horse ran in Kentucky, I guess at Keeneland, right? Did you ever say you at Keeneland? And had told me they really liked that horse. And didn't break in his debut and didn't run that well, and then didn't run particularly well at Churchill either, but has really woken up in the two races in New York, and he got a 99 buyer, and feels like it's one thing to get sort of exaggerated figures when you're running with the racetrack, but to run a figure like that when you're against the racetrack is extremely impressive. And that's a good-looking horse. I agree. I mean, I don't know where they go. It's funny. I was texting Chad, and he said to me, he mentioned Last Gunfighter. And I said, it's funny. That's exactly the horse I was thinking of as well. It's a horse that he had taken over the training of, Last Gunfighter, and he won like six or seven straight races with him before he ran second to a good horse. I don't remember exactly what. Maybe. I don't remember who he ran. He ran second to a horse he couldn't beat in a big stake. And that's the meeting was with the track, obviously, and it's so hard to judge. The track seems to be changing, and there was a lot of wind on Sunday, and the times, you know, they've been a little faster at different points of the day. It seemed to be very slow for the 7th and 8th races, so obviously a very slow final time. I know Byron David in 83, I was talking to Andy about the numbers yesterday. He was talking about the difficulties he's had in general in making numbers for Aqueduct a lot of the winter, but particularly this weekend. Well, that's a promising horse. You know, we'll see. I mean, I know that Michael Dove was talking about it after the race, and I saw he gets close with Dave Grenig, and, you know, they have to figure when they want to, you know, train him up to a race like the Peter Pan, sort of see where he stands. But I don't see why not. I guess if you run the Peter Pan, you do that at the expense and all likelihood of running in an easier spot like the Mike Lee. But I think there's times, you know, this is the time that you want to find out what you have. So wouldn't surprise. I mean, I don't have any. Like I said, I haven't talked to Chad about it, but I know some Michael mentioned that.
Well, and kind of a big day. In fact, a big day for the Dub and Partner group, because there was also the maiden breaker. We should bring up, right? Hometown.
Oh yeah, they bought that horse to sale, the Windstar from Windstar for maybe $65,000. That horse ran. Yeah, I bet the horse was second. Jeez, he went in a winning race. But what's the horse name? Hometown?
Hometown. Beat Mandatory.
That
was Sunday. That was right before. That was before Mystic Night. That's why I brought this up. Yeah, he won three.
That makes sense. He got a big figure, right? He got like a 90 buyer or something.
90 buyer, one turn mile, and he had tried Churchill. He had tried three quarters, then just got beat by First Line last summer at Saratoga at the beginning of the meet.
I bet him in Saratoga.
Thanks for
there reminding. You go. That horse did run a fast race. I didn't think of it. These are tricky days, but no, that horse is probably okay. He ran a big race. I didn't realize that. Did Michael have the winner? Was that horse on the stake the day before it got horse or not? Shady Lady.
Yes. That was the Atrus. That was when Atrus.
Quite a weekend for Rob Atrus.
Four wins on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Every one of them taking a big punch in the last splash.
7-2, 4-5, 2-1.
5-1 to 3-1 with the firster.
Right.
3-1 to 2-1 with the one in the fifth. I don't know, whatever. It was excellent meeting. I'm not actually meeting. High roller couldn't lose. I think he went 6-5, 4-5. And the stake, I think, went 8-1, 5-1. The gold rail played a part in every one of those results.
I got to mention, I'm hoping... That was not Gold Rail. That was Storm Advisory.
I was on the rail for a while. But anyway.
You mentioned... I brought this up yesterday. You mentioned Sadie Lady and winning the correction. And, of course, was part of the cross country, Andy. And I'm hoping to get the player from New Orleans. Two guys partnered up on a $240 ticket. They singled Sadie Lady. And they scored $108,054 each.
Congratulations.
How about that?
I thought that was you. I assume when I heard there was one winner, it was you.
Well, no, I was knocked out with Mijos. I didn't think he was impossible, but I tried to tiptoe a little bit through there. I'm stupid. No.
It was a tricky sequence, to say the least.
It was. It really was. And then the one that did hurt a little bit. We'll talk. Might as well fold in some Oaklawn as well from the weekend. That mile and a half race, the Temperance Hill, Carlos L just hung in, and would not get past. I thought I was home. That was the last leg of a middle pick four, That horse, I'm going to forget the name now, Luck. I thought he was going right on by. And 47-1 popped there.
I wouldn't have an idea he was going to win that race before it or after it.
But. I know.
Eddie Olchek involved. Eddie Olchek is a part owner of the winner.
With the Good Friends people. And I'm hoping we can't do it today. But we'll get Renee Douglas. We'll try to get Renee tomorrow. I mentioned. What were your thoughts? Let's talk about some of the Oaklawn results. I really haven't dug into this much. Looked like that Silver State for Asmussen kind of announced himself a little bit in that Essex win.
I like that. Gutsy win over Radar Superstar. Radar Superstar, really. Got your blood going. But yeah, I mean, he's improving, you know, where he stands. I don't know. I guess. You know, we'll see who's pointing towards the Oaklawn handicap. I mean, I guess, you know, the one we'll get a little deeper for that. I'm not exactly sure who's around, you know. Do you have to take on the Mighty Maxfield there?
Maybe. That would make sense. That'd be a good spot.
Well, isn't Mystic Guide going over to Dubai?
Yes, he is. We should fold in then, if you weren't that impressed with that, we should fold in the Phillies, the Phillies and Mares. She Dares the Devil came back. And if you want to talk, you know, if you want to fold in the Beholder result, I suppose, it feels like the Phillies and Mares is going to be the glamour division for the Elders this year.
Well, at this point, they're definitely more compelling group than the males, but that can always change, and we'll see. Obviously, I guess, you know, Brad Cox will keep. She hires the Devil and Monomoy Girl apart, so I guess they're running Monomoy Girl at Oaklawn in the Apple Blossom, where she can run on Lasix, but she hires the Devil will go to Churchill for the La Troyenne, and they're only 2 weeks apart now. I hope Swiss Skydiver takes on Monomoy Girl. I'll take Swiss Skydiver in that matchup. I was awfully impressed with her this weekend. The Holder, she's just terrific. You know, I feel like in the Breeders' Cup, she obviously didn't gather gains. She just didn't run a race that day. She's a better horse than that, but we'll see. Certainly, that would be a terrific matchup to see those two horses meet in the Apple Blossom. And, I don't know what to make of the She Does Dell race. I know Latruska didn't break it sharply, and in fact, she almost beat her while raiding behind a slow pace when Latruska's more of a speed type. I wouldn't be so sure to completely dismiss her in the Apple Blossom either. She's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't disagree
at all.
Not
as though any of them are running these such extraordinarily high figures that, you know, they're scary. You know, Monomoy Girl wins, which is to her credit, and she shows up and she wins. But she's not running super, super fast races. I mean, the fastest races of any of them are Swiss Skydiver. You know, you look at her Alabama, you look at her Preakness. You know, I know a lot of people say, oh, she's a mile and a quarter. You know, I hate that moniker. I think what Monomoy Girl probably her advantage is that she is as proficient at a mile and a quarter as she is at other distances, and a lot of horses probably aren't as good. So I think she probably rises the challenge of a mile and a quarter in the way that others may not. But I don't think of her as a mile and a quarter horse. I don't know where that moniker came from. I think she's just a damn good horse. And my opinion, I'll take Swiss Skydiver whatever distance you want. I want her at 7 furlongs. I'll take her at 7 furlongs. You know, they could run her in the Humana Distaff next, and she'd probably beat whoever was running. Well, Gamine is in there, so that might be a problem. But you know what I mean.
Sure. No, I keep hearing and reading, you know, people saying what a throwback type she is, that you can ship her anywhere, any configuration.
Everywhere she runs. Yeah, no, Kennedy Peak has set himself up with her to be second guessed by people, jerks like me. And he's turned all of us into, fans, honestly. I mean, you know, I rolled my eyes at some of the decisions he made last year, and he was right. I mean, he deserves a lot of credit. You know, you take a horse like that, and you know, sometimes your trainers are take the blame for owners making them do it. I feel like Kenny was the one who was, I'm sure his owner, Peter Callahan, was happy to go along with it, but it feels like Kenny was the one who was really aggressive with her, and he could have looked bad, and he didn't, and I think that he deserves a lot of credit for that, you know. That's just a fabulous horse. She just shows up and runs. So I was sorry she had run a race in the Breeders' Cup, because she is so much better than that, you know. You want to see her. But I think that, you know, unlike a lot of horses that were trained to peak for the Breeders' Cup, Kenny was just running her, you know. Mm-hmm. And she was running well every time, so she was more susceptible to having her bad race. And look, at the end of the day, the more frequently you run, the more likely you are to have a bad race here or there. Hers happened to come on Breeders' Cup day. But I don't think he should be in any way criticized for that. He should be applauded for the fact that, unlike so many horses these days, she raced everywhere all the time, and she delivered in gigantic ways. Not too many would have gone for that Alabama in the Preakness.
No.
He was one of two horses to beat Authentic last year, you know?
Yeah.
Two horses finished the front of Authentic last year, right?
Well,
you probably can't even name the other one.
I'm not
Honor AP.
Look at that.
He was retired shortly thereafter.
That's right. Good job. Yeah, the one I hesitate to bring this up with Kenny, but when she had the situation in the Breeders' Cup, the horse I immediately thought of was Take Charge Lady, who, despite all of her tremendous accomplishments, he would get her to the Breeders' Cup and she would just melt. It was like the craziest thing. There was no reason for her to struggle like she did in three Breeders' Cups, and yet her three worst races, like, by a mile.
Maybe she hates purple.
Well, that was the era when all the saddle cloths were the same.
There you go.
Everybody's annoyance. I don't know if you recall that about her, but I mean, she would win.
I don't, you know what? I don't remember her at all. Did she start out with Pat Byrne?
No. Oh no, Kenny always had her. Always
Are you
had
sure
her.
Sure of that?
I'm almost positive. I don't know why.
For some reason, I feel like Pat Byrne had her at some point.
Interesting.
I could be completely wrong. By the way, I'm not, but I. Yeah, I probably am. I don't know why.
I'm going to pull here. Hold on. It takes 2 seconds. Let's pull her up. She's one of my. I've always loved her, and it was incredibly frustrating that she would get to the Breeders' Cup and just bomb. And you know, that included as a juvenile, you know, right at the beginning. Okay, here we go. 22 starts.
Really, this had a much stronger effect on you than it did on me. For some reason, I don't.
Well, because. I'm sure I better. That'll do it. Let's look at her first start.
For some reason, I don't have a great...
No. Kenny had her from word go.
Okay. No, I assumed you were right. I just didn't.
Here it is. This is unbelievable. She wins at First Asking at Keeneland in April. He comes back in September, preps for the Alcibiades, wins the prep, and
I'm
then wins the Alcibiades.
I'm looking at the Equibase right now.
Now, wins
right.
The Alcibiades.
You want to come on to Tempura? Was that Tempura?
That sounds right.
Won the Silver Bullet Day.
Yeah, lost the Tempura.
Peter in the Kentucky Oaks. I don't even know.
Farda Amiga.
Oh, yeah. She was second in the Gazelle. I don't remember who beat her there.
Imperial Gesture.
I'm probably there.
It's crazy. You know, she was in Azaria.
Well, I mean, probably she won every race she was in. She's a good horse. I'm not knocking her. She's a very good horse. But, yeah, she really bombed, though, in those Breeders' Cup races. You're right. They were, like, the worst races. So it's interesting. She ran sixth in every Breeders' Cup. She was sixth three times. Right.
Yeah, and then other than her last, right? She was first and second in every other start of her career, except for after the Breeders' Cup, when she then was retired, and she was fifth in the Fall City and was obviously finished.
First or second every time, leading into those Breeders' Cups, and then on to the last race. Yeah, that is amazing. I don't know why. There's some reason I thought Pat Byrne traded horses. I wonder if a horse has a similar name or something. It's weird. Anyway.
Well, she was just, look at when you see who would beat her. I mean, it was the best of the year, a Sightseek and Zeri and All-American Birdie knocked her off in the Fall City, actually. In the Fall City.
Not the final start.
Yeah, the one in 2000 and.
Should we talk about Concert Tour before I have to go? Or
yeah, sure.
You'd rather not take Charge Lady for her 10 minutes. We can do that.
Well, there are people. There are people. You don't know how many fans she's got. She's got a huge following. She does. Okay, go ahead, Concert Tour. Your thoughts?
I thought it was funny because it was the first prep that we ran where. I think there were horses that came out that were disappointing, right? In general, the horses that were supposed to run ran their races. Obviously, Concert Tour ran very well. I think he put himself in the blob behind Life is Good at this point. You know, obviously, if Life is Good is able to run numbers like he ran at San Felipe, then this feels not going to, you know, and he can do it in a mile and a quarter in the Derby. And it's a lot of ifs, but if he does, he's going to win. After that, I think the race is very open. I think Concert Tour's performance fooled people a little bit because he won so easily and by such a big margin. The temptation was to immediately say, oh, well, he's the horse that maybe could beat Life is Good. And, you know, as I said on the show, you just want to wait for the figs and see how the race stacks up. Because once you got a chance, and I didn't really have a chance at that time to see the final times, and see that he ran 3/5 of a second slower than She Dares the Devil and 2/5 slower than Silver Slate. And they're older horses, and they're nice horses. So I'm not suggesting that's a terrible performance. But it told you that the number was going to be in the mid to low 90s. So, and you know, any speed figure you look at, it's unlikely that it's going to come up particularly high. You look at the rags and the thoroughgraphs, he wasn't wide, you know, it wasn't a particularly fast pace. It wasn't a slow pace, but it wasn't a fast pace. So, you know, he had a good trip, and he was best, much better than the field, much, much better than the horse he ran against. And it was a visually impressive win. But where it puts him in the, you know, the Derby group, it puts him as a potential contender. Nothing more, nothing less, but nothing more. And, you know, I think that at this point, the Derby still goes through Life as Good. That doesn't mean he's still got to run well in the Santa Anita Derby and stay sound like everybody else and be able to carry his speed. And it does present situations. I was talking about this with Greg Wolf on the show on Sunday. You know, what does Bob Baffert do? Because it does feel like he may have two need-to-lead type horses that are going to be potentially two of the top choices in the Derby. You know, what do you do? Do you approach the Santa Anita Derby and or Arkansas Derby, where I assume you'll see Concert Tour, as preps and say, well, we'd love to be able to see if these horses can rate or help teach them to rate in a race and risk perhaps losing those races to find things out for the Derby because they are preps, or are they just going to let these horses roll and do their thing and then let the chips fall as they may in Kentucky? And listen, if you are the connections of these horses, you... I mean, what do you say to Bob when Bob says, well, I'm going to go with this one and we're going to raid with this one? Well, maybe you have a different story. I don't know. You know, that's Bob's problem, right? That's something he's going to have to figure out. I mean, obviously, Life is Good seems like the far more talented one of the two right now. But those things can change, and that doesn't mean that one of them ends up being more suited to the Derby than the other one. But it does seem like a potential situation where he's dealing with two of the choices, and they're both horses that may need to lead to be effective.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's, I'm sure that he's thought of that. It's a dilemma. Listen, everybody would like to be in that situation, have that dilemma, but that doesn't mean it's not a dilemma.
Well, and, you know, one of the elements of all this is, and we say this now more and more every year, these horses are so lightly raced, you have no idea what, you know,
we really are.
Yeah. You don't know if this is actually a horse that when we get to a mile and an eighth and classic distance, is this a horse maybe that, you know, can rate on the lead or near the lead? And you know, they don't have a resume.
I agree. They don't have opportunities. You know, I mean, that's one thing that Barkley Tagg, very much to his credit, found out extremely early with Tis the Law. I mean, he could have just sent Tis the Law the lead in races like the Champagne and the Jockey Club, Duncan Jockey Club, but he wanted to teach his horse and to learn about his horse.
Right.
And I think it benefited them going forward. I realized that he ended up, you know, blowing up in the Breeders' Cup and unfortunately never ran again. But nonetheless, I think it helped not just the horse, but Barkley. And listen, I mean, the last thing he would ever do is criticize Bob Baffert, who I think deservedly is... He's certainly the greatest dirt trainer I've ever seen. I wasn't around in the 50s and 40s or even the 60s, but from what I've seen, and you know, he's won 800 derbies and he wins every prep race, so this isn't a criticism of him, but and the reality is that Bob Baffert is not afraid to use horses' speed. You know, West Coast Wire the Travers, Arrogate Wire the Travers, they're two good horses you wouldn't even think of as speed horses. So Bob is ready to go to the lead with horses that are closers if the situation dictates.
Yep.
So he's fearless in that respect. But on the other hand, in doing this, he gets in that situation where he has two, you know, I don't want to use the word speed crazy, but they appear to be pretty fast forward horses, and you just don't know. And, you know, imagine that the two of them got into a duel at the Derby and drove each other to the ground. Well, I think that would be a situation that a lot of people, well, considering that no matter what Bob Baffert does, a lot of people like to criticize him. But you know, that would be a situation where it wouldn't be a winner in that one. So what do you do? I don't know. You know, I don't, fortunately, I don't have to make those decisions. But I think it's an interesting concept and conversation.
Well, and you know, to some degree, when you think back to that Life is Good performance, given all the work that he was putting into trying to get the horse to, you know, rate and then to draw the rail and, you know, the hand is pretty much forced that you're going to go, you know, you kind of would like to see, I'm sure he'll hope that maybe in the Santa Anita Derby that he can get into a situation where, you know, he can track a horse and, you know, he's always trying
maybe
to
drawing the rail made it easy for him to go to leave. I don't know.
Maybe,
so maybe the argument is that, if Life is Good is the better one than Concert Tour, then you let Concert Tour roll, and you assume that the better horse can adapt to circumstances in a way the other horse can't. But then what happens when Concert Tour wires the field and everybody second-guesses Bob for rating? He's going to get second-guessed no matter what he does. That's the one thing that Bob can look forward to.
Well,
you know, to be fair, I'm not one of those people. He does bring some of the abuse on himself. Having said that, I don't believe that. I believe a lot of it is over the top, to say the least. But, you know, if they let Constantine go and they rate Life as Good and Constantine wires, everybody's going to say what an idiot he was for rating the other one. So he will definitely be criticized even if he wins the race. That you can be, that's the one thing we can be sure of. He'll get
Well, you brought up authentic before, and that's what was so evident last year in the Derby with him, was that, you know, here was the horse that you were maybe a quarter of the way or they were getting on the backstretch, and you're saying to yourself, oh, my God, this horse is going to wire the field. And at least that's what I said.
Down the backstretch. He went 46 and changed the half. He wasn't exactly walking.
That's true. But for, you know.
Like the people that say that commentators stole the Whitney from St. Liam. He went 23, 46, 109 and changed. Give me a break. They go 47 now. People go, oh, they're flying.
That is funny. Now, it's heating up, that's for sure. Also heating up, the temperatures in the Northeast, we're going to have turf before we know it.
I'm very excited, as you can tell.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. I look forward to every day, Steve. That's the kind of guy I am. You know?
You greet every morning with a smile. That's you.
I had crazy dreams last night. You know, you have those dreams and you wake up and you're still in the dream and you have to, like, convince yourself that that was a dream, you know? I had two straight days of those. I like that. It's always fun. I dreamed I was back on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange where I worked in 1984 and 85 mostly.
And what was happening?
Nothing overly compelling. I think, you know, it's like you have dreams, you know that you're in college and you know you didn't go to a class.
Right.
My life, and a final coming up and you've never been there before. I even occasionally still have those, though not as frequently. I used to have them more when you're closer. And now I occasionally have option trading related dreams. This was an option trading related dream.
That's funny. I love it. Before we go, Maggie Moss is going to join us. But before we go, I do want to point out to people that Friday at Aqueduct, Andy, and I'm sure you've already given it at least a pass, Mr. Winston returns for his four-year-old debut in the sixth race.
That's talking chat, actually. We'll see. You know, he ran so well in his second start. First and second start, and then he just stunk at Saratoga. But we haven't seen him now for 7 months, so something obviously went wrong. Well, Tread, those horses are really running in New York. He's coming back. I always hope that Jimmy Jerkins horse in the rail could be okay. I think somewhere in there he's
at your fire.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what he does. I wonder if he can run better. Yeah. Picking up.
And
we're back on this. I looked at the book. There's no turf race in the book for Thursday, April 1st, but there are two on the 2nd. Now, obviously, if the turf is ready, Martin will add, you know, Martin and Keith will add turf races on Thursday, but I think it's just, and Wood Day is the 2nd. So, listen, if the weather keeps up sort of the way it's been and stuff, there's no reason to believe, you know, barring rain or anything, we'll be back on. It'll be interesting to see when Glenn takes the tarps down.
Well, that's
probably a week before.
Yes.
Big job. Those tarps are a big job. Anyway, go to Maggie Moss. Eller, thank you for being on top of that, the deputy thing. That was cool.
Well, glad to see
that was great. Good for her. That was awesome. And other people that helped too.
Well, she's vigilant. Tireless. Yeah. Tireless.
Okay. Good.
Andy Serling, right. Everybody. Andy, thank you. And I'll point out, too, not only is that sixth a good race, the seventh is an optional claimer, a very nice group, a 10 as well, going a mile. So there's a 7/8 race as the sixth. The seventh is terrific. That's a very compelling double, to be honest. I think we may Friday. There is the carryover. I will mention Friday. There is the carryover in the Stronach 5 too, which I'm sure will be widely approached. All right. Always a pleasure, whether we're congratulating her on a stake win or anything else, congratulating her on her vigilance when it comes to aftercare and horses off the racetrack. Maggie Moss joins us. Too long between drinks. Maggie, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Always a pleasure, and always listen to your interviews. And being way out here in the mountains, it's the only way I can kind of keep track of the real world.
Well, you're kind, and I'm glad that where we provide that touchstone. And for Maggie, for observers of the industry, you're a touchstone for people when it comes to the aftercare, and a constant beacon when it comes to making people holding their feet to the fire, looking after the horses once they're off the racetrack. And here's another incident that is really alarming. Explain how you came to hear about the deputy and those mares that were in the kill pen.
Steve, thank you again. I obviously have kind of a sick love for horses, and that's why I'm in this game. But I am part of many undergrounds and underworlds and threads that people don't know about, which alerts me almost nightly to horses off the track that are in very bad, precarious positions. So I am in that underground. I was sadly aware of way too many horses. It's this business of kill pens and extorting horses has tripled as far as money, and those folks are spreading out. And I've certainly talked to the Jockey Club and everyone else about this problem, which I think is far more serious than whips and Lasix, etc. But I got home from dinner Sunday night and didn't have my phone on, and when I got home at 10:30 my time, which was 12 midnight, 1 o'clock Eastern time, my phone had just blown up, first from an underground group of people that are in Texas telling me the deputy was in a Texas kill pen, and there were also numerous texts from Janine Sahadi, who trained him, who's a very dear friend of mine. So I, first had to make sure it was him, second had to try to trace how this happened. And I think it was 12:30 that I recognized that this was a real kill pen, meaning they do, in fact, ship to Mexico. And simply, I think at 1 in the morning, said, I'll take care of it in the morning, and we'll get the bail, and we'll get them out of there. And went to bed, and then it struck me I had been dealing with 11, 12 broodmares, emaciated broodmares, all that just had foals, that was standing in a Louisiana kill pen. So I sort of lost my temper, to be honest with you, and got pretty emotionally upset, and just struck me that we keep celebrating racing and we're just dealing with these really sad situations, no matter where these horses are barned. And so I put it on Twitter that he was out there and the mares, and gosh, it'd be nice to get some help. And then it just went nuts on me. And the next thing that happened, and my only concern was the horse, because these kill buyers are pretty volatile. And I got very concerned and then found out that many people had called Mike, who is the proprietor of the North Texas Kill Pen, and that included Barry Irvin and Gary Barber, and people had started calling to offer, you know, to also take care of this horse. And the next thing I knew, he was saying, too late, this horse has already been bailed. And that's where we're at this morning. And I frankly have used every resource I know to make sure the horse is safe, A. B, did he really get bailed? And if so, by who? And C, or are they just going to hold out now to extort more money?
So we don't know necessarily if he's, I mean, who has acquired him, essentially? Do we know?
Well, I think he was actually standing, ironically, in Iowa up till 2017. He was sold or given to a quarter horse, barrel horse breeder in southern Iowa, as I understand it, and was breeding either barrel horses or quarter horses. That woman said he became difficult, sold him to Texas, so that's how he ended up there. I have used about every resource I have, and I have come up. Do I think the horse is safe right now or still alive? Yes. B, was sold, maybe was in fact sold to an anonymous buyer that's not on Twitter, involved in the thoroughbred world, and perhaps a quarter horse person that isn't aware. Either that's happened, that he has in fact been bailed for $1,500 to an anonymous person who they won't tell us, or B, did they find out his value, and in the next day or two, he'll be listed for a lot more money. But I've seen pictures of him. He doesn't look bad. And unfortunately, in this world, as I tried to explain to Janine and other people in racing yesterday, it's really hard to get your hands wrapped around this type of criminology or this type of world. I mean, I'm a former prosecutor, Steve, and this is even a darker world than I can help make people understand as to the greed and money of the kill buyer.
Explain the process for those that only hear, you know, bits and pieces, and you know, this is really an abusive scenario that that you talk about, the hostage taking, essentially, and you know, the people that get these horses in the pipeline, and they know the sensitivities of the thoroughbred community, and they, you know, are really just taking advantage to extort as much as possible. I mean, explain where this, you know, where this whole system stands and what the possibility is of short-circuiting. I mean, we did have a slaughter conversation last month, as it happens, but from your vantage point, are we doing a disservice by playing into their hands? I mean, is there a different way? Obviously, the SAFE Act would be the best way to, you know, make it impossible to transport the horses or make it illegal to transport them for this purpose. You know, what has to happen to stop this?
Well, it's a really rapidly growing business, meaning they're sprouting up everywhere now. There was a day many years ago where we could buy these horses for $300-$400. As you know, along came Dina Alberano, and that drove the prices up. And these kill pens are in Iowa, Kansas, Texas, Kentucky. They're everywhere. And these are, I sometimes equate it to sex trafficking. They've become very valuable. They've gone from 300 to 400 to 1,500 to 2,000. I have not been successful speaking about this or getting the attention of the racing world. And the amount of horses have almost tripled. The SAFE Act is number one because, frankly, the transportation treatment of these horses and what happens to them is so graphically abhorrible that I'd rather see horses euthanized than what they go through. So the SAFE Act is number one, but as you know, we seem to be lobbying for much other things right now than the horse itself. And that's going to take the powers of all the lobbyists that worked on the new federal legislation. That's going to take the jockey club. That's going to take getting the attention of the racing world that we need to lobby for the SAFE Act, because then at least we can stop, or it would be a good start, number one. Other than that, there is a quagmire of 50% of the people that say we're not going to be extorted, you know, let it go, quit paying these people. And there's 50% of the people that just can't do it. And there's a very big cross divide in my world as to those that keep paying, which makes the prices go up and the business go on, and those that say we're not going to do this. So it is one of the most emotional, tragic things, and I frankly, Steve, have zero comprehension of why the racing world, and there's a lot of great people, don't get me wrong, there's great people that care deeply about their horses, but sadly, these 12 broodmares in abhorrible conditions standing in a kill pen this morning are just all had foals in Louisiana, and Louisiana, I just, when I talked to Jim Gaglione at the Jockey Club, and at first he said, we can't do anything unless the state takes action. Well, Louisiana is, I've been, from the governor on down, that's a lost cause. I really think the Jockey Club needs to step in and do something about these breeders, because the bad breeders and the ones that are throwing away the broodmares is absolutely heartbreaking. The broodmares are the saddest part. So I always will have to call on the regulatory people that start saying, you people are going to lose your rights and you can't anymore. So that's what I've been working on.
The Louisiana, you know, we had a period of time where there were certain spots from the Northeast that were problematic, and that was, that's been pretty well extinguished. The problem continues though on a regular basis. It seems like the Louisiana, you know, right off the track, we've had those stories that that have, I think, dominated really this whole, you know, this whole conversation. The SAFE Act story, I mean, there's been years and years now of opportunity to get it done. And it's hard to understand why what's prevented it from, you know, crossing the goal line.
Well, that's politics, Steve, and that's priorities. And I'm strictly a welfare girl, so I have spent 7 years of my life in Louisiana and had to throw my hands up. I will tell you that until the powers to be, whomever that might be anymore, understands what's happening to these horses over the priorities they have. I mean, can you imagine me sitting back and talking about Lasix for 4 years when I'm watching hundreds of horses go to Mexico, thoroughbreds that people bred? I'm not a political person, so I can't answer that, but I greed and money in this business, the public perception of what they feel is the public perception. I mean, I guess I'd ask you this question. why isn't PETA or other people involved more concerned about horses getting their heads cut off in Mexico than whipping horses? I mean, get your hands wrapped around that one. I can't. I mean, I hate excessive whipping. I hate any type of cruelty. But, you know, when I'm sitting here seeing lots of horses bleeding, you know, which is not a pretty sight. So how do I get my hands wrapped around Lasix and whipping versus horses dying violent deaths? And I don't advise anybody ever to go to Animal Angels or anywhere and look at what happens on the border or look at what happens or what they do to these horses. Don't go there. You'll have post-traumatic stress, but it's abhorrible. And I don't know how to get their attention. I'm not a good politician. I'm very outspoken, and this it's difficult to keep your passion for an industry that doesn't care about the horses that provide. And I do have to say this, Steve. I mean, the TAA, New Vocations, so many people do so much. But keep in mind, you know, that's for the people that have the monies to support those organizations and are good owners versus those that are throwing horses away like trash. So that is the way it is. And that's where I'm at this morning, is I've gotten five or six texts of how the heck to save 11 broodmares because they have nowhere to go.
What do you tell the well-intentioned and those that want to help? How are they best served supporting your efforts, and how do they know? I mean, obviously, after a horrifically awful incident, as referenced earlier, there's real confusion. Obviously, giving money to a TAA accredited facility is one thing, but when people see these appeals and these discussions online, how do you want them to react? What do you recommend?
I want the regulators, maybe Kentucky, Louisiana, the racetracks, the jockey club. I want them to start coming down on those that continue to abuse and throw away their horses. In this particular case, Louisiana, interestingly enough, Louisiana gives breeders money to horses no matter where they run. If you go to the Louisiana breeder site and look at registered foals, you won't recognize many of the stallions. The horror stories out of Louisiana with these broodmares and horses are abhorrible. I had to walk away last year after my mom died. I couldn't deal with, 24/7 dealing with it. I've been to the commission. I've been to the governor. They don't care. And until the jockey club cracks down on the Louisiana Racing Commission or cracks down on the breeders, until the regulators stop and quit saying, I'm scared of getting sued. That's what I hear all the time. And Steve, I'm a lawyer. Okay. I talk to these people. I've talked to the Louisiana Racing. We don't want to get sued. We can't exclude these people. We'll get sued. I mean, it makes my head burst. I can't, it's dysfunctional, but yes, the answer is don't let the jockey club, the regulators, they need to say, we're not going to allow you folks to register foals or run at our racetracks because you don't care about the horses. How tough is that?
No, it shouldn't be.
It's not my job. Okay.
No.
And that's what I would say. Is, there's so many, in Iowa, I started the anti-slaughter policy, and the powers to be, the cattle people, didn't like it and lobbied against it, so it's gone. And it's just politics and lobbying and money and greed. And I just call on people to tell the powers to be, the horses are the most important. And like I said, the FDAA can just handle so many, and they do a great job. But the horses we're talking about now are not the horses people want, because they may not make great, you know, off-track thoroughbreds, or maybe they have problems. But we don't have that place in this country, other than maybe friends of Ferdinand is trying to start something with broodmares. But that's the best I can tell you. People put their foot down. They did, you know, with Lasix. They did with whips. Mm. They did with whatever other ridiculous rules we have out there now. Why are those important and the horses are not? I guess that's my question.
Well, and
why isn't that's... PETA? Why isn't PETA involved with slaughtering of horses instead of whips? I mean, that's crazy.
No, no. You're very a question that's obvious, and you know, in terms of priorities, can't be answered. You know.
Well, I'm hoping maybe, you know, my concern, by the way, is always the non-famous horses that can't help where they were born, because
right.
I guess they have equal rights. But maybe this thing with the deputy can take us to another level, because the fact that a Santa Anita winner is sitting in the North Texas kill pen should get people's attention, I hope.
We'll follow it, and I'm glad I was able to reach you and get you know the current specifics too, and we'll you know follow Maggie's feed. I don't want to end on this kind of note, so let me end on a horse note. I saw last week at Delta Greatest Love maiden breaker.
And that was probably one of my most favorite wins this year or last year, and that's where I'm at with my horses. I mean, I've had some great horses and nice horses, but after I bought that yearling at Keeneland, sadly my mom died, and I've never, ever, even she was my best friend, I have never named horses, and it struck me she was my greatest love, and that was sure a nice filly, and I had a lot of, not a lot, but issues, and, you know, gave her time, and I know it was just Delta, but she was really impressive, and that, believe it or not, was one of my more emotional victories, albeit not sexy, right, Steve?
No, it's a nice win. I mean, and she's cut out to be a nice filly. She's a 3-year-old. She's by Spitzer. You gave $130,000 as a yearling. Lauren Carlisle signed for you. And why not? Why can't she take a step forward? 66 buyer, not a bad start to get things going. And we'll be rooting for her, always rooting for you. And you do a service.
I heard Tom told the story about No Parole yesterday, which... You can imagine an owner being called and saying, "Hey, you might be excluded from the stakes race." I thought, "Well, if I'm not dealing with enough dysfunction in racing, here we go." So there you go. And many people have, you know, rooted on No Parole, who's just been amazing. And, you know, what do you think? And frankly, I haven't even had time to think about it, but I always just want him to be safe and come home and everyone be happy.
Well, he's on the docket, the 8th race on Saturday, Fairgrounds, with partner Greg Tremontin. And best of luck to No Parole, Maggie. And keep me informed. Let me know anything I need to communicate to people about the situation.
Steve, thank you for taking the time for this really important issue. I, for one, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Maggie Moss, everybody. You should be following Maggie. She's vigilant, and as you can tell, she's got the clandestine spotters working on her behalf and on all of our behalf. It's tireless, thankless work. Difficult situation. This is the second time already so far this year we've had this discussion and the SAFE Act situation. Things are going good at Cheltenham. There's a couple more yet, so jump on board. Kevin's hit a couple. We'll talk to him tomorrow. Maggie Moss, Andy, Tom Ventura, OBS, Aaron Wellman, Brian Kelsey, and Judge Bill Walmsley to talk about the lawsuit that the HPPA is bringing against TISA. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.